Welcome to Let's Grow. This is a personal development podcast, and I'm your host, Jeremy A. Taylor, but you can call me JT. Whether it's a short message from yours truly or an interview with a special guest, this is your place for weekly encouragement to keep going and growing. My goal here is simple, to leave you better than I found you. And I know your time is valuable, so let's dive right in. What is up, good people? This is JT. Welcome back to the Let's Grow podcast, your place for a shot of encouragement, real conversations, real people designed to help you grow, get better. Nothing more, nothing less. I mean, there's really no agenda here. Well, I'd say this, if there is an agenda, it's to help you understand what your value is as a person. That's really all I care about. And I'm excited today to chop it up with a good friend of mine by the name of Jeff Jordan out of Bowling Green, Kentucky. Jeff, what's up, my man?
Hey, what's going on, man? Thank you for having me on today. I'm excited.
Hey, glad to have you here, Jeff. Honestly, man, this is a conversation that's been a long time coming. I mean, you and I have talked in depth about a lot of the things that we're going to cover today. And honestly, if we had all of those things recorded, man, we'd have tons of content.
Oh, man, for sure. Yeah. It's been a lot of conversations, for sure.
Totally, man. Tough conversations at that. Conversations at all hours of the day, different seasons of life. And, man, we've been friends through a lot, and it's been really exciting. It's been a blessing, a privilege, and a pleasure to see you grow the way that you have. And, of course, we'll get into some of that. But, Jeff, before we go any further, tell the listeners here on the podcast a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? What's important to you, man? What kind of work do you do? That way they know who Jeff Jordan is.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm Jeff Jordan. I have a beautiful wife. Her name is Jewel. We have a beautiful three-year-old, rotten to the core. Her name is Genesis. So they keep me busy 7 days a week, 24 hours on the clock. And for me, I'm originally from Louisville. I grew up in Louisville for quite some time. Well, take that back. I'm really from Cincinnati, Ohio, but I lived in Louisville. I graduated high school in Louisville, but I've been in Bowling Green for about 12 years now, which is crazy to believe. My work that I do on a daily basis, I work for the city of Bowling Green at one of our community centers here in town. And I've been a community center coordinator for going on 3 years now, but I've been with the city five. I was part-time for two of those years. And so yeah, man, I get to inspire, help, encourage kids nonstop as well. So that's pretty cool to do, to see young people, come to me for, just advice or help or don't know how to do their homework or whatever. And so I get to plan programs, activities throughout the seasons, throughout the year. So, that's my career path.
And in addition to that, Jeff, I'm excited about this. You recently launched an entrepreneurial endeavor, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So yeah, that's been awesome, man. It's been a big blessing. We launched back in January of 2022. So this year, early this year, is a limousine company. And so it's called BG Limousine Company Transportation Services. So we do a lot of transportation for sure. But like I said, it's been a big blessing. It's been a learning process, of course, in the first year, but it's also been amazing from the customers, our community support. I mean, it's been awesome, man. It's been a big blessing.
Man, well, thanks for sharing that with us, Jeff. And, the crazy thing about seeing you grow and do the work that you do is, I can remember, and I think we'll unpack a little bit of this through the conversation. And the crazy part about this, guys, listeners, I'm telling you, Jeff and I, we could unpack his story and our friendship and the things that we've learned and the ways that we've grown. And we could be on here for 3+ hours, right? I mean, we really could. Honestly, I honestly thought about, should this be a 2-part episode? Just because I know Jeff is one who doesn't mind sharing some of the nitty gritty details of his story, because his transparency, his vulnerability, his authenticity is what allows him to connect with people the way that he does and in some of the work that he does. But before I get too far ahead of myself, you know, one of the reasons why I admire and appreciate Jeff Jordan as much as I do, and I'm excited to share this on record where other people can hear it, is because the conversation today that we're having is one that embodies that your circumstances and your past and where you come from and what you've been through does not have to dictate who you are, where you're going, what you can accomplish, the value that you can add to the world. And man, Jeff Jordan embodies all of that. So Jeff, I thank you for your friendship. I'm excited to share what we're going to share today. You've inspired me more than you know. Folks, I had an opportunity to stand next to Jeff on his wedding day, knowing what I know about him and what he'd been through, to see him marry his beautiful wife and then transition from into parenthood as a father. It's just been really exciting to unfold, and you're going to learn why as we talk here for the next few minutes. But I just wanted to make sure I share that, Jeff. I know hopefully you're heading big and you can get out of your office after the conversation. But Jeff, you know, you talked about growing up in Cincinnati, being originally from Cincinnati, but growing up in Louisville. Part of your story and the heartbeat of who you are and why you're inspired to help people the way you do is because you grew up in the foster care system. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yep. I was in foster care for almost 17 years, man. Almost 17 years.
And I can remember whenever you, as we got closer and you started to share some of your story, because guys, Jeff and I got connected through a church in Bowling Green. At that time, I was still, I had been teaching and coaching at a high school in Bowling Green, Kentucky. I had just transitioned out of full-time teaching and coaching, public education, but I was still connected with the church community that I was a part of. And Jeff got connected there through the recreation ministry coming in to play basketball. And so we began to build a friendship, a relationship, and a friendship through a mutual friend of ours who also served as a mentor to both of us by the name of Michael Edwards. Michael has been on the podcast, but he was an associate pastor at that church at that time. And so Jeff and I got connected, began to build some bridges, and I started to learn more about him. And Jeff, if I'm correct, you unpacked a little bit of your story saying that you had been in and out of upwards of like 20 plus, maybe 23 different group and foster homes.
Yeah, 23 different foster homes and group homes combined. So, yeah, I've seen different households, different group homes throughout my 17 years of being in the system.
So, but how did you end up in the system, Jeff? Share that with us today.
Yeah. So I was in foster care, at the start of birth, really. My family, my biological family, I have no idea who they are. And so, my mother, my biological mother, she was in and out of trouble with the law. And then a big sentence happened for her to where she had to be incarcerated for, I think 2 to 4 years or so. And so as she was incarcerated, she ended up getting pregnant, while she was in jail. And that was with me. And so as she was in jail and as she was pregnant and whatnot, and when I was born, they put me right into the system. She didn't want to give any name of who my father was, but the assumption is it had to been a correction officer. So I was put right into foster care, and then I got my first adoption at the age of 2 years old. That adoption really started of my life, of what I can remember, my timeline, started at the age of 6 with this family, of remembering every single thing that happened until the age of 10 of abuse, of neglect, of just hate, harm, or whatnot, to a 5, 6, 7-year-old kid. that this family, you know, did for me, you know. And so I was, like I said, in foster care. And then they adopted me. And then from the age of 10, they terminated their rights on me. And so once they terminated their rights, I was put back into the foster care system. After this family just has abused me, you know, my mom, she made me sleep on the floor in our basement with no clothes on at night. I'm talking about no clothes at all. And, you know, and so when I was put back in the foster care in my first group home, I was excited because I got to sleep in a bed. Even though I was hurt and, you know, didn't understand the circumstances of terminating rights or what that meant. But yeah, so I was put back in foster care. And then my next adoption wasn't until the age of 17. So I don't know how much you want me to share of that. But I mean, that was my journey of being, you know, from the age of 10, going to one home, to a group home for 6 months, to another home. And the reason why I bounced around a lot, I laugh about it today because it really is funny to me. As I got older, I knew what I started to wanted to look for in a family. Sure. You know, I wanted someone that was going to love me, care for me, show me, guide me, lead me to a future. You know, there was times that I go to some of these homes and it wasn't no love. It was sometimes I go to these homes, me and my social worker knock on the door and knock on the door, knock on the door, and nobody had come. Well, then they finally came. They come with their sleep gear on. Like, I mean, come on now. You knew I was coming this weekend. And so so that's why I found some joy in learning from what I've been through. It's been a test as far as who I am today. You know, giving so much to my family. I'm sure, like you said, I don't want to dive into too much. But like I said, that's how I ended up into different group homes and foster homes, just because different families wasn't providing that love and that support and care that my social worker and myself was looking for and that I deserved at that time.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was curious about, Jeff. Of course, at the end of the day, the gist of it is making sure our listeners understand, wow, like someone born while their mother was incarcerated, no relationship or connection to biological mother or father whatsoever, straight into foster care system, and where you were adopted at a young age, then rights were terminated. Then, of course, we're going to get to the second adoption here in just a few minutes, which is kind of like, at the end of the day, you know, whenever you broke this down for me, I was like, man, the second adoption and the story about you transitioning into adulthood and then moving to where you live at today, I was like, talk about kicking a man while he's down, right? You know, and I remember like the anger and the frustration and the disappointment that you were still wrestling with at this time. But I wanted people to hear about the abuse and the neglect and all the transitions. And so I would assume that, Jeff, through all of this, a lot of the behaviors and a lot of the actions and a lot of the things that happened to you and around you and things that you were doing were a lot of you overcompensating for the neglect and the lack of love and wanting to know what your identity is. And in addition to that, you feeling as if, you know, I need to do these things for attention or to belong, right? Because I remember you telling me about running with some people that you didn't need to run with and you getting in trouble and, you know, whenever you were, you know, early stages of adolescence, things along those lines.
Right.
But Jeff, when you bounced around from these different homes, well, I'll just say this. Let's just transition into when you were 17 and you said you were adopted for your second time. Tell us about that experience. What played out there and how did that relationship end?
Yeah. So like when I got to this family, and I joke about this too. So like my social worker, I was actually blessed to only have three social workers throughout my time in foster care. Yeah. And that is really rare and unheard of. And so,
Before you go there, Jeff, why do a lot of kids end up with multiple social workers? Like what happens there?
Well, it's just, the turnover rate of a social worker and the caseload is so much, you know, like they have, social workers can average between 15 to 25 kids.
Wow.
That's one caseload.
Wow.
And so that's what I'm saying. So I was blessed to talk about Melissa Robinson, who is a truly amazing person that I still have contact to this day. I mean, she's like my third mom or fifth mom, whatever you want to call her. but I mean, she's awesome. She was at our wedding. I mean, she spoils Genesis. I mean, like Melissa has been nothing but a blessing in disguise for me. But I always joke with Melissa and people about Melissa being my agent. She was kind of like my agent of finding this right home. And so when we finally found this perfect home for me, I mean, when I walked into this household, I mean, the atmosphere of this family just pouring love, you know, into me and making me feel right at home. I mean, right away, I could tell you, like, as of yesterday, like it was yesterday when I walked into their home, my mom, she made some chicken pasta parmesan. And I mean, it was amazing, right? And then like we had some great Kool-Aid, and I'm talking about sugary, right? I mean, but it was all at that 17 age, right? I'm just like, man, this is gonna be lovely. This is gonna be
everything's
awesome.
Lining up, yeah.
Everything. And so, make a long story short, you know, she guided me, she helped me. Once again, at this time I was 16 before the adoption took place at 17, but you know, I was a junior in high school. You know what I mean? Like it was just, I mean, she had two sons and a daughter. They was both older. All of them are older. Like I said, just warm welcoming. You know, told me right from wrong. I mean, she was just real firm about every single thing and making sure that I was going to pursue, you know, higher education, wherever that may be at. You know, just encouraging me to know that those were options and just guiding me. And then she also had like this chair in her room that we can go sit at and, you know, and just, you know, pour our hearts out at her, you know, if it was good, if it was bad or whatever the case may be. To sum all that up, you know, once I, you know, picked the university that I, you know, was going to attend, which is WKU, I'm wearing that today. You know, she was super excited. My family was excited. And of course, at this time, I'm graduating high school and all that, and been adopted already. And so, you know, and with that, kind of back up a little bit, my mother have had over 35 kids in her home as a foster mom, as a foster parent throughout her time. Mm-hmm. And she chose me to adopt, which was an amazing thing. I didn't understand why, but she wanted to adopt me. And I just, that was just so loving and so warm, you know, felt for me. And so to fast forward, you know, once I found out that I was going to go to Western Kentucky, and one of the reasons why I chose Western is because I knew that it wasn't in Louisville and it was going to be far enough to where they had to drive to come see me and come visit me.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where my next point is, you know. So once I came to Western in 2010, you know, as a freshman, I came in a week early with all the other freshmen excited, ready to go shopping. You know how it is. You go to Walmart, get all your stuff, get that little mini refrigerator and, you know, like get everything, get it loaded, get it, you know what I'm saying? I had bins of snacks and
college life.
Yeah, you know it. You know how it is. And so Melissa, she came down with me. You know, everybody was so emotional, you know, leaving and all that. And so, but me and Melissa, we decided that we was going to go out to eat once my family dismissed themselves and went back to Louisville. And so, but prior to that, you know, of course, right? Family is family. So high expectations is, you know, fall break, you know, winter break or Thanksgiving, like this season right that we in right now, you know, you expect, you know, okay, my family going to come. I didn't have no vehicle and nothing like that. And so you expect that your family is going to come and see you or come visit you or come pick you up for those special holidays. And so to fast forward a little bit, throughout my freshman year, I talked to my mom every day. I actually talked to her the night that they dropped me off at Western, told her I'm getting settled in. And so I talked to her week after week after week after week. And so, make a long story short, here comes what was it? Fall break. You get 2 days off, but Western is still open. Campus is still open. And I'm like, well, I'd rather go home, for these 2 days. I'll see my family, see friends. And my mom, my two brothers, and my sister said that they was coming to get me. And they never showed up to get me. So I'm like, okay, it's fine. It's fall break. Like I said, campus is open still. I can still go eat. I can still do what I could do.
Yeah.
Fast forward again, here's Thanksgiving coming around, right? So, all right, yeah, we're coming to get you, blah, blah, all this good stuff, all that great stuff, right? All right, here's Thanksgiving. Campus is still open, but ain't. You can stay on campus, but nothing's going to be open to where you can go eat anything like that.
Sure.
Never came and got me. Okay, well, all right. Well, this is, a little frustrating. Why can't nobody come get me? In Thanksgiving break, no one was answering their phones, on the day that I was supposed to get picked up. And so I'm like, well, maybe they stuck in traffic. All these things, thoughts started to go through my head, but nobody was still answering. Nobody was answering their phone. Okay. Well, come to find out, man, if I was to sum it up a little bit more, that they wasn't coming to get me. They wasn't coming to get me for Thanksgiving. And then really from Thanksgiving on, I never heard from them no more.
Yeah.
And so, one of my friends who I went to high school with went to Western with me. And so one weekend I was able to catch a ride with them to go back to Louisville. And then I get to my house. There's a for sale sign in front. There's one of those little lock boxes on the door, but my key still works. So I can get into the house.
Yeah.
No cars is in the driveway. No cars is in the garage. But when I opened the door, there was boxes. There was boxes. There was stuff taken off the walls, blah, 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 blah. So nobody at this time, of course, still answering their phones. Nobody, whatever. Cool. My friend that brought me to my house was still outside. So I'm just like, I don't know what's going on. You know what I'm saying? And so I just went back to his house and just kicked it with him that weekend. So Jeremy, to fast forward, man, it literally became, a solo dolo. I was by myself over at this university with 20,000 plus students. I was an hour and a half away from home. I lived through so much of, what's going on, confused, hurt, upset. I mean, so many emotions was going through my head at that time because I'm still calling, I'm still calling and seeing somebody should answer.
Because at some point you're like, man, I realize what's happened now. I'm smart enough to realize what's happened now, but I need some answers.
Yeah.
I need some answers. I need some closure because I don't know what to do.
And that's what I was saying. So like definitely when Christmas came around, so Christmas campus is definitely shut out, So like I have to go back home, you go back home for a month and a half or so before you come back for spring semester. But Jeremy, before we even got to that, man, like we just, unwrapped here, I didn't know what was going on to where, what was going on or what was triggering that nobody was answering their phone for me at all. And so I called Melissa as well. And this is what, I guess you could say, put the icing on the cake for me.
Yeah.
She told me. And of course, prior to me calling her that day, I talked to her plenty of time. This is just this one conversation here. And she told me, she said, Jeff, I hate to say this because I don't know, but I'm going to tell you anyway. And I said, okay, Melissa, go ahead. She said, the only thing that I could think of, Jeff, of why you haven't talked to them or why they haven't called you or anything like that is because your mom received a check from your adoption. And I said, oh, for real? You know, okay, so I should get some money, right? And she's like, well, Jeff, I'm saying it in another way of like, that could be the reason why you haven't heard from her. So it still didn't dawn on me what she was saying.
Yeah.
And so to keep it real, it was, they got a check from my adoption.
They played the system.
They played the system and said, screw Jeff.
Yeah.
And so we've
adopted Jeff late in the game before he ages out of the system.
Yep.
Knowing that we won't have to deal with Jeff very long, yep, but we'll still get paid. And then Jeff now becomes a legal adult and we're going to ride off into the sunset with our check.
Crazy, right? And so when she told me that, man, Jeremy, I was shut out, you know.
Yeah. Completely broken.
Completely broken. I'm not sure how much truth or what all you want me to share in that sense of my and how hurt I was. But, you know, I lived through so much of that darkness and I didn't see any light anytime soon. And so
I know in that time span, Jeff, there was a little bit of homelessness. There was some issues that were, I know, spanning back from an earlier age as well, a little bit of drug use, getting in trouble, running with the wrong people. Yep. But at the end of the day, I'm sure when you say that you were at the darkest place you were at a place where, as born again believers, we would look at someone and say, man, they feel hopeless and helpless.
Yep.
So guys, I wanted you to hear that story before we transition into what Jeff has learned from it, where Jeff is at today, how he's grown through some of that. I wanted you to hear Jeff's story because, truth be told, there's a lot of people. Now, we could pull the stats. We could pull the numbers. You could go on the internet and you could Google and look up different states and the numbers of kids in the foster care system. And you could hear stories as to why people are hesitant about adopting people, so forth and so on, right? All of these different things. You hear stories about what's happened to Jeff. You hear other stories about other people. And then there's kids who've had beautiful situations, mm-hmm, right? They found families who love them, who cared for them, who supported them, and lifelong friendships, relationships, partnerships. So you can find a number of different stories, but the fact of the matter is that Jeff's story is one of many, but it blew my mind because I had never really built a relationship with someone who had been through this type of trauma before. Hmm. And so, Jeff, when you get to this place where you're dark, you're hopeless, you're helpless, what are some things that you feel like helped pull you out of that place?
Man, I would definitely say the first thing was finding love and finding truth within myself, mm, with, you know, trusting, you know, people again.
Yeah.
And that was
a process.
Yeah, that was a long out process for me. But to go back to answer your question, what helped me, and what saved me, honestly, I would say her name is Donna Brown. She was an advisor at WKU. She was my advisor in my program. Donna sent me an email stating, you know, you fail, pretty much. You're going to be on academic probation going into your spring semester.
Yes.
And she said at the end, you know how it is. You know, people write, but please contact me if you need any help or have any questions or concerns. And so right then and there, I'm like, hold on, what you mean? And so I contacted Donna. And Donna, when I told her my story of what I was going through, she just broke down in tears.
Well, I got excited when you said that. I got ahead of myself because it's one of those things where it's like if people don't know what you're going through, they don't know how to help you.
Yeah, that's it. Right? That's it. Yeah. And so she was, so when she told me to please come to my office right now, like that was her initial, like, I meet you there. I'm not even in my office, but please come right now. Mm. And so I did, you know, I went with no intentions of school into my mind, really. I'm just like, let me go ahead and sign my classes up, blah, blah, you know, for spring and whatever. But she literally set me down, Jeremy, and said, no, we're going to get through this. And I'm, if you allow me, Jeff, allow me to help you. And I'm like, okay. And so fast forward a little bit, you know, I got registered for spring semester. She connected me with a mentor of mine still to this day. His name is Robert Dean. I didn't know who this guy was. But she said, hey, I want you to meet this guy. He works at Western, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay. And so we go, we walking on campus, and we walking, we talking, we walking. And then next thing I see a bunch of police cars. And we still walking, and we walk into a police station. Mm. And I'm like, hold on. So anywho, Robert Dean was the chief of police at WKU at the time.
Yeah.
And so she connected me to the chief of police, Robert Dean, and said, Jeff, he's going to be a good guy. He's going to be a good person that you can trust. And if you can't trust him, then, you know, okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so anywho, Robert Dean, make a long story short, became a true mentor. I mean, he poured so much into me. He, I worked for him as a part-time assistant. So when I got out of class, I go there. And so all of this though, Jeremy, now to this day, if I was fast forward to present, Robert Dean and Donna Brown was steering me into a place of trust. They was keeping an eye on me. They was making sure that I was okay and safe every single day.
Yeah.
And then Robert Dean told me that he had a place that, you know, that'll also be really helpful for me, and which is Living Hope. So Robert Dean, he attended this church and he said, I think this would be a good place for you.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, for what? You know, to play basketball? I could do that at Preston on campus.
Uh-huh.
So anywho, man, Jeremy, I mean, it was just a timeline, a puzzle. School, getting back on my feet, you know, like you said earlier, I was homeless. I lived in my car for 3 weeks, you know, just really navigating of saying, Jeff, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, of course, like you said, we you know, I got connected with Michael Edwards. This guy, he came to me, Michael Edwards did. He came to me when I was just sitting down and he said, you want to play horse? I'm like, yeah, I'll play you and horse. And this dude ended up beating me 4 times in a row. I had no idea how this man beat me 4 times in a row. And then our relationship got strong. And so then I started attending this church. You know, I started to meet more people. I started to trust more people, have faith in myself as a believer again. You know, and, you know,
Jeff, let me ask you this question, Jeff. Like now, as you look back, you can see how God's hand was in these people being a part of your life, how God used these people, like you said, to move you from a place of helplessness to hope, right? To being able to trust, respect, build healthy relationships with people. Mm-hmm. But Jeff, before you were introduced to Living Hope, was faith a part of your life? Was Christianity, was Jesus a part of your life before you got introduced to Living Hope?
Oh, for sure, man. I grew up in church. And so the family that I was speaking on from my first adoption, who was really abusive, you know, that family, which is my father as well, who is deceased from that family, was a musician. He was a chief minister of music of a church. To where we traveled everywhere, and but we was in, and I was involved in church all the time. You know, and so I knew that at some point, you know, if I was going to stay with this family or not, that I knew that God was always, you know, a big part of it all. But of course, at the age of 19 years old, didn't know that. But then once I was put back in foster care, you know, different families, you know, attended church, and that was part of it too, right? Like some of the families went to some beliefs that I didn't believe in. I'm like, this ain't gonna work out, you know. So that was part of that 23 different homes as well. Sure. And so, but yeah, my faith has always been, you know, completely strong into what I wanted. And that was part of what I was stating earlier, you know, knowing what I want and what I need. And some of that was, you know, some of the beliefs that other folks believed in, you know, me being baptized at the age of 13 with another family, you know, me going to Bible study, me learning, going to Sunday school. Like, I wish they still have that, but you know, like just knowing who I am as a believer. And then once, like you said, how you said it, you know, far as coming to Live in Hope and them pouring more into me, Michael Edwards just showing me, you know, and guiding me and helping me, as you know, always had some knowledge of wisdom and, you know, teaching moments and, that's just always been helpful for me.
Yeah. One thing I really appreciate about Michael is the relationship that I built with him as well. As he mentored me, helped me work through a lot of things and provided some biblical counseling and shepherding, he was never afraid to sit with you in anything that you were going through. Yeah. But he cared enough about you that once he built a close enough relationship with you where he earned, all right, this is good, where he earned the right to be able to speak truth in love to you. There's one thing to speak truth, right? There's one thing to speak truth in love. And there's another thing, I think, to speak hard truths to people. And oftentimes, I think people try to speak hard truths to people when they haven't earned the right to do so through that relationship, right? And that's the thing, that the common denominator that you and I have with Michael is that he built a relationship with us that earned him the right to speak hard truths in our life that challenged us from an accountability perspective, right? Correct. He earned the right to be able to ask us, are you doing what you said you were going to do, right? He earned the right to ask us, are you taking the steps that we talked about taking? Because if you don't take these steps, then we can't get to this, That's what I really appreciate about Michael is not only was he willing to sit with us in a lot of our pain, but he also was willing to open up the Bible and say, let's look at what God's word says about this. Let's pray about it. Mm-hmm. Let's talk. But another thing I loved about Michael was, you know, he was always asking us about what our goals and aspirations were. What are things that you see yourself doing? Where are places you want to go? How do you want to help people? He was wanting to draw the best out of us, and help encourage us because he knew that it wasn't about utilizing his influence to hoard followers, right? He wanted to develop new leaders, right? So. All that being said, as Jeff and I began to build that friendship through Living Hope, I saw him wrestling through some of these things. I got to know his story a little bit better. Then I saw Jeff taking initiative. I saw Jeff leading Bible studies, aka what we used to call table talk back in the day, you know, where people would come and gather, and folks in the community, particularly folks in the Black community, right, were coming to a place, a church that was predominantly white, right? But they were coming to Hoop because it was a safe place to hoop, but also it was a place that we had an opportunity to minister to people, right? Share the gospel, ask questions, not trying to change who people were, but give them an opportunity to grow and learn more about what Jesus wants to do, the plans that Jesus has for their life. So Jeff, that started moving you in a direction of taking initiative and leadership. And so with that being said, you've been able to use a lot of what you've been through to minister through the work that you do. So, Jeff, why is it so important? How has your past shaped you in regards to the work that you currently do? Like, why are you so passionate about doing the work that you do based on what you've been through?
Man, because of just really finding people's heart, you know what I mean? Like, really, like, for me, it was for yourself, like you just said it, you just dive in and said it all, like, you know, how we built our relationship, Michael, you know, different people, Donna, Robert, you know, all these people, just being available, you know. And so for me, that was so huge for me of, okay, I want to be available. I want to be able to listen, to understand, to give feedback. And all of that was a puzzle. Like I said, you, Michael, Robert, Donna, to where the person I am today, that I'm able to help. Like I just earlier, I'm able to help our young people understand that they are not alone. And so for me, man, that's just really so important to me, of finding your passion and finding it all into your heart. Because, like I always say, you know, if you have a passion, that's great, but your heart has to be there first. And so for me, man, you know, once I knew that I was, you know, going through what I've gone through, I did not want to ever say that, man, like, I wish my life was this, because it's just, that's not what God called me to be. And so living with excuses was something that I knew that I couldn't continue to do. And so now, as I give back and I pour into these young people, as you mentioned, like Table Talk. And so Table Talk consists of older people. I mean, it was adults in there.
Yeah.
But like you said, that gave us that ability to just to share and to see how people are doing. Because to let them know that, like, we care about you. Like, me and you, we have been through some stuff. So we're not going to sugarcoat anything. And so that just allowed me personally, to build those relationships with these people, these young men or girls that I work with now. It's just like, hey, don't let your story or your past make you who you are today. You know, don't, like, that shouldn't be your excuse. Don't let that define who you are, because trust me, I've been there. And so that has just allowed me to open up and share with several people.
That's beautiful, Jeff, because, you know, I look at your story and I see now a college graduate, someone who's using their influence to affect change in the community of people where he used to be in the situation that some of these kids who come into the community center that you see on a daily basis, right? You used to be that young boy. And so for you to use your story, because you can connect, you're empathetic, you understand what they're going through. You're someone that they can look up to. You're a role model and a father figure to many of them. And then on top of that, you know, now an entrepreneur as well. It's just incredible, because I remember hearing a story some time ago, and I don't know really all the details of the story, nor do I know if it was simply just a parable per se, or if it was a factual story, but it was basically summing it up, a situation of a couple young boys who were brothers growing up in the same household, going through the same exact things because they were siblings, but them processing what they had been through completely differently. And it shows you the different mindsets that people have. And one went on to, you know, flourish and be a leader and be responsible and take ownership of himself and be successful and love and lead others. The other one, because of the trauma that they had experienced and made excuses for himself and didn't accept responsibility, went on to establish unhealthy habits that ended up putting him in situations where he was homeless and drug use and incarceration, you name it. But these two people coming from the same exact place, right? And a lot of that difference being our mindset, how we process things, right? And so for you, Jeff, you know, I know it took a while for you to develop your mindset the way that you did, but I remember seeing you reading good books. We talked about people that you would listen to and and folks that you looked up to, and, you know, skills that you were trying to develop, all these different things, right? And how it shaped your mindset. So Jeff, mm-hmm. as we work to close here, I really, really value that no excuse mantra. You mentioned that a minute ago, and I remember hearing you say that once upon a time, because I've told your story, Jeff, in a number of different settings, keynote presentations, workshops, school assemblies. You know, I've talked to a lot of people about Jeff Jordan's story of what he has overcome and not allowing your past to define your future, and that your current situation isn't your final destination. And I talk about how you just say, no, I'm just not going to make any more excuses for myself. Mm-hmm. I can't change what happened. Mm-hmm. I can't change what's been done to me, but I'm now at an age where I am responsible for my choices. What am I going to do about it? Right. Yep. So that no excuse mantra is big time. But Jeff, what would you like to see changed in the foster and adoption care system since you came through?
Yeah. So, before I answer that question, I've had the privilege to go back and speak to, you know, many foster homes and group homes, case management meetings, whatever you want to call it, social workers, done trainings, workshops, and all that. And so, to answer your question, in those times that I have gone and spoke and speak of my story and to incoming or formal or current foster families, the parents, is love. Like, you have to give, you know, that love and that support, and understand the kids that are in your home. You have to understand their story. And the one thing that I share a lot is, like, you know, if I come to your home as a kid, you get a folder, right? You get a folder of, you know, this is what he's doing, or this is, you get like a report, right?
Yeah.
And one thing that I loved about my mom was she said she had that folder. I remember like it was yesterday. She put it down. That's not who I want to know. I want to know you. And so, and that gives me goosebumps still to this day, man, because it's one of them things of you have to be willing to allow, you know, that kid, that young lady, that young man to be themselves. But you as a parent have to guide them. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, you got a son, I got a daughter. And one thing that we were both learning, because we just talked about it the other day, is they growing up. But it's our responsibility to be able to say no, yes, or whatever, you know, praise them on. And so if I was able to go back to and change, or one thing that I tell parents a lot is, like I just mentioned, you have to love them. You have to care for them. They've been through so much already.
It's not just providing a place for you to stay, right, but it's being intentional about the relationship that you're building and the direction that you're giving.
Correct. And so that's the number one hitter for me, man, because I think if you allow, and also one thing that I will say is you have to treat any human being that you bring into your home as a foster parent as they're your own.
Yeah.
And that's what I was just saying, far as, yes, I may have a report. I may have a two book binder about my past or my life, but I also want to be treated just like I'm your own.
Sure.
So I get it that I may not be able to, you know, do the things that your biological kids may do. But like I just said, I want you to be able to love me just as you love them.
Yeah.
And so I think that's very important, man. I think that's really big. And so the things that I've told parents, you know, like, if you can't love them, then you don't need to be here. Then you don't need to allow them to come into your home. Like, they coming into your private space. They coming in and connect with
you. If you're not going to pursue this a certain way, you don't need to do it at all.
You don't need to do it at all because, of, like I said, of these, you know, all these kids have different stories, different passes. And if you can't, deal with that, or you can't, you know, tolerate that, then it the home may not be the best for them. And like I said, you may not be the best fit for the different situations that these kids may deal with or you may read. And so,
Jeff, how old are you right now?
I'm 30 years old.
Just hit the 30 mark. Old man now. Jeff, as a married 30-year-old, married to your best friend, and you guys have a beautiful relationship. Jayla and I, we love Jewel. I can remember before we moved from Bowling Green to Somerset over here, I remember you guys coming over and us doing Bible studies together, and you know, kind of formed our small group with Alex and Jed. And I even have the pictures on my phone of us hanging out, you know, some of the last few times before we moved. And, you know, 30 years old, married to your best friend, an intentional, loving father, beautiful, precious daughter. Jeff, do you still struggle with your identity because of what you've been through on any level?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And that's just because I want to make sure that I'm giving the best. Sure. And, you know, being the best person that I could be for my wife, you know, being the best father. And I think like you, yeah, to answer. Yeah. I would say because of what I have gone through, you know, it's kind of like going down a path and you don't know which way to go. Right. Yeah. And so I still have, you know, that lost, you know, still confused of
those missing pieces where you don't feel whole. And for me, like Jeff, and go ahead and finish that thought because I'll plug something else.
Yeah. And then, you know, I love people, right? I really do. But I dislike when people say to me, you know, well, but you got your own family now, so you can, but that's not the point. Yeah, I know that. And that's why I'm going to make sure that I give my family 100% of the best that I didn't get, but I'm still missing those things, you know what I mean? And so, those still, you know, certain things, certain seasons as Thanksgiving, Christmas, you name it, man, like that still goes to my back of my head. I'm human, you know, like, man, I wish my daughter could meet, you know, our uncles and aunt, you know, like,
and play with cousins and this and that. And, you know, and even as, even being content in Christ per se, you know, laying this down and resting in the work that Christ has done, knowing that that can fulfill you, that can complete you. There's still a component to this physical side of our existence before we enter into glory that you're going to wrestle with those things, you know. And so for me, you know, because of the multiple divorces and the broken blended family and some of the things that I experienced as well, things that I saw, things that I went through as well, you know, a lot of that, the enemy tries to trap me into believing that you don't have what it takes because you didn't see a healthy home. You don't know how to do this because you've never been there before, just like yourself, Jeff. But, you know, because of all this as well, before we close down, Jeff, you know, do you and Jewel, I know this is a personal question, and obviously you can steer it and guide it in any direction that you want to go in. And if it's something that you don't want to attack, that's okay. But because of what you've experienced, have you and Jewel ever discussed the possibility of fostering or adopting anything along those lines?
Yeah, for sure, man. That's something that, because my wife, she's also been adopted before. And so, prior to us dating and all that, you know, us learning each other, I mean, that was a huge connection. You know, yeah, we may not, like I said, she may have never walked the walk that I did as far as being in foster care, but we know what adoption looks like together. And so just learning about her story, you know, her learning about my story, you know, before we, you know, had Genesis, that was something that we talked about real heavily of doing is adopting in our first 5 years of us being married. Yeah. And so so now that we got Genesis, it's another 5 years, but that's on the radar. And one thing that we get to do as a family every year, constantly, we actually have our own I guess what you call it, our own, actually, I don't even know, Soul Surprise Ship, there we go, together. It's called Jordan Faith. And so one thing that we get to do is to give back to those who are in need or who are in a foster care system. And so we put a certain percentage, you know, of funds into this account, and doing like this season right here, you know, we try to help back and give back, or back to school, we give, you know, buy, you know, help a family or whatever. And so that's, those are the practices that we are teaching Genesis right now. So Genesis, she may go, you know, mama or myself. And so, but yeah, we have a lot of fun with having those conversations of wanting to adopt. We definitely got that on the radar for sure still.
Awesome, Jeff. Well, listen, man, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know this episode has gotten a little lengthy, but honestly, I anticipated that happening just because of unpacking the details of your story and folks not knowing or hearing that before, right? There was no prerequisite to this episode, and so it's tough to share a lot of those details in a condensed version without people really grasping what you've been through and what you've experienced. So, Jeff, I'll say this in closing. Man, I love you from the bottom of my heart. I'm unbelievably proud of you. You mean the world to me. And I appreciate you taking on this conversation with me today, especially at this time of year, right? Yeah. When this time of year comes around, you experiencing these thoughts, rehashing some of these emotions, working through some of that trauma, ministering to yourself, trying to love and serve and lead your family. I appreciate you leaning in to the conversation that we had today and being willing to talk about it at this time of year, because I know it is a tough season for you. But I also know that your story, Jeff, is going to give somebody hope, right? I'm trying not to get too emotional, but I know your story is going to give somebody hope, because it's one of those reminders that, man, pain may settle in for the night, but joy comes in the morning, right? Miles and I say on a daily basis, God is good, God is great, Romans 8:28. We wanted to create a little jingle with that verse where he's reminded that God is working things for our good, right? And I appreciate you being an example of someone who doesn't allow what they've been through to keep them in a cycle of perpetuating the pain and the trauma. You've worked through that. You're in a healthy space where you're now able to help other people who are trying to climb out of that. And Jeff, man, you have my blessing as you continue to do that work. So I appreciate your time today, brother.
I appreciate you, man. You've been a huge, you asked that question earlier as far as mentors, man. You definitely, you top tier of a huge impactful person in my life, dog. I really appreciate you. You've been truly, a great friend, a great mentor, a great brother. You know, it's one of those things that I was telling another good friend of mine. I'm like, man, I don't talk to you every day, but when we talk, you know what's up. And, you know, but we definitely try to, you know, talk and link up as much as we possibly can, of course. But yeah, man, I really appreciate, I love you, dog. You know I do, man. Like, you've been my dog, man. And so I really appreciate you. I love Jayla. Miles, he's growing up. And I mean, it's really cool, man. God is great. And he's doing good things, man. And so it's awesome.
No doubt. Well, thank you, Jeff. Again, we talked about Jeff's story, overcoming obstacles and challenges. He shared how his work has helped shape, how his past has helped shape his work. He shared with us some of his mentors and what he's learned from them, changes he'd like to see in the system that he grew up in. And then, of course, you got his mantra today, no excuses, right? And that's tough love. That's tough love. No excuses. That's saying at the end of the day, although I may be going through something difficult, I can still make it as long as I don't give up. So thank you, Jeff, for that. Listeners, I appreciate you guys. Remember, don't just go through life, grow through life, and everybody can encourage somebody. I love you all. We'll catch you on the next episode. And until then, we will holla. Hey, thanks again for listening in. If you enjoyed this episode and you received some value, could you do me a favor and share it with a friend? If so, I really, really, really appreciate you helping me get the word out about this podcast.
As a reminder, this is your place for a shot of encouragement, and my goal is to simply leave you better than I found you. So, my friend, I certainly hope that was the case for you today.